Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of May 22nd, 2018. And a special welcome to all of our new Low Country listeners. Your detours are like when a train shuts down Columbia, so we empathize with your pain somewhat. And we delve into those current woes that have forced the closure of westbound lanes on the Wando River Bridge and the brutal impacts it's had on Charlestonians and the state. Also, a programming note, South Carolina ETV and the Post and Courier are hosting two gubernatorial debates this week. Republicans will debate for an hour on Wednesday at 7 p.m. and Democrats on Thursday also at 7 p.m. And you can watch that statewide on SCETV, SCETV.org, and simulcast on South Carolina Public Radio. And we are the only debates to have all candidates participating. Now, The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections while you wait for the next royal wedding of either Prince George or Princess Charlotte. What's that, 20, 30 years? Come on, I'm not a young man. I want to see another royal wedding. Or while cashing out your 401k to bet on Justify in the Belmont Stakes. Maybe don't do that. Not a good idea. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Associated Press reports that 271 people died from the flu in South Carolina during the 2017-2018 season, according to the State Health and Environmental Control Department. Previously, the 157 deaths reported during the 2014-2015 season were the most reported. Now, flu seasons typically run from October to May, and the high number of deaths was caused by a strain of flu that was predominant this season, H3N2. Number two, State House and Senate budget negotiators won't have a budget compromise ready until lawmakers return on June 27th. They were expected to have the $8.2 billion budget ready for lawmakers this week on May 23rd, according to the state newspaper. But after limited open and behind-closed-door meetings, a compromise has not been reached yet. The June 27th date means legislators will not adopt a budget before the June 12th primaries or any subsequent runoffs, which will be held on June 26th. The state's fiscal year begins July 1st. Number three, the Berkeley Independent reports that Berkeley County has accepted $2 million from DHEC to clean up the now-closed Viva recycling facility. County council members officially accepted the money and are moving forward expeditiously to hire a contractor to remove the more than 200,000 tires from the site in Monk's Corner. DHEC revoked Viva's permit after multiple violations over the years and after being fined $1.6 million. Number four, Charleston International Airport is running out of parking spaces, which is why the Charleston County Aviation Authority just approved a new 5-tier, 3,000-space parking deck to be built next year. The Post and Courier reports that the $100 million deck will blend in with the existing 3-level auto deck and will be completed by November 2020. Now, twice in the past week, the airport has reached capacity, forcing it to use its remote lots. Fueling all of this is the airport's passenger growth, which has doubled since 2010 to nearly 4 million people coming and going. That number is expected to reach 4.4 million this year. And speaking of flying, chemtrails. Oh, just kidding. If you believe in chemtrails, this podcast full of real news is not for you. But that won't be the last time a conspiracy theory buries the lead. It is 2018 after all. It's been a week since the westbound lanes of the Wando River Bridge in Mount Pleasant were closed due to one of the 8 cables holding concrete segments together snapped. Department of Transportation officials have split one lane into two from the Ravenel Bridge to I-26 and turned the Wando River Bridge's 2 eastbound lanes into two-way traffic on Sunday to ease gridlock that has rippled across Mount Pleasant, Charleston, North Charleston, and surrounding areas. And if you think it's just a local traffic story, it's not. It has big impacts for the port and commerce in the state. That's expected to last 4 weeks as crews work on an emergency repair to the beleaguered 30-year-old bridge. Now, South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen lives in Mount Pleasant and has been on top of this story from the start, while also being directly affected by it. This is her first time on the South Carolina Lead, and we wish it was under better circumstances, but welcome nonetheless, Victoria.
Hey, thanks for having me. At least I'm not on the road.
Ditto. Victoria, start us off with where exactly this bridge is, where it takes drivers, and what exactly happened.
Okay, well, it's called the James B. Edwards Bridge, but most people who live here know it as the Wando. And so basically, if you live east of the Cooper River, that's Mount Pleasant, the coastal community, say like Sullivan's Island, Isle of Palms, then you rely on either one of two bridges to get to the Charleston area and beyond. The first bridge, of course, is the Ravenel Bridge that takes you to I-26 and other places. The Wando Bridge basically connects the town of Mount Pleasant to Daniel Island. It's the first part of that span of bridges that then goes on to the Don Holt, which then takes you on to Charleston and beyond. So basically what happened was last Monday, the Department of Transportation, they were doing weekly inspections. This was because of a cable that they found back in 2016. They found that that one had been damaged. This time during the weekly inspections, they actually found a cable. This is just one of eight cables that is responsible for holding these spans together. One of the cables had actually snapped. And they took a quick look. I shouldn't say quick look, but they made a decision right then and there to close the bridge. They thought it was just a really big safety issue. And so when they did that, you know, people in Mount Pleasant really weren't prepared. I think town officials, city officials downtown weren't prepared, but they had to do it. So the traffic nightmare kind of started then. And what happens for people who don't live here is that when that bridge is shut down, or there's just even one accident, let's say, on that bridge, everybody kind of scrambles to go to the next place. And of course, that's the Ravenel Bridge. And that has just been a really slow climb. So I would say commutes that normally would take about 20 minutes are sometimes taking as long as an hour, hour and a half,
wow,
sometimes 2 hours.
Victoria, I know you just mentioned this, but one of the main concerns was that local politicians, state lawmakers, and the governor weren't aware of the bridge's situation in terms of that they were doing those weekly inspections, and they were caught off guard because it was abruptly shut. Do you know, have those tensions eased between these local politicians, these state lawmakers, and SCDOT? I know Secretary Christy Hall has been working closely with those local leaders to get them as much information as possible, but what's the mood on the ground among local leaders and, I guess, also drivers and Charlestonians?
Well, it was interesting during that second press conference last Friday at 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, there had been all these stories and reports about, you know, local officials, state officials saying, hey, you know, we didn't know about this. We didn't know you guys were so concerned with cables on this bridge and that you'd been inspecting them weekly and that this could actually happen. They were all in the same room together, minus the governor. You know, it was the mayor of Charleston, the mayor of Mount Pleasant, the police chiefs of both of those communities. And so I kind of wondered what the mood would be like between everybody, because there you've got the transportation secretary and they're shoulder to shoulder with these folks. So after they had their press conference, they, you know, one of the reporters basically asked, hey, how you guys doing? And she answered, she said, you know, here's, I know that people are concerned, they're worried. She has put together a task force to go back and look at all the records of the repairs and what was done, when it was done, why it was done. And she said that was going to be made public in the next 10 days. And that was last Friday. And I think that right there kind of made people go, okay, we're going to know what happened, at least in 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because remember, Christy Hall did say in the beginning that, you know, we have nothing to hide. This is not something that we've been hiding. We've been just working on it. No one's really been asking about it. But at the same time, they haven't really been volunteering. Of course, you know, sometimes that could lead to people maybe being worried about even driving over the bridge could spark its own situation. But for the most part, Christy Hall is a straight shooter. I mean, I've worked with her. I've interviewed her multiple times, and she knows what she's talking about. She knows the ins and outs of transportation infrastructure. She's an engineer herself, so she knows these things. But at the same time, you know, people get heated over this because it is, like you said, it's adding to these commutes. And it's also affecting truck traffic, right? The Wando, the port terminal over there, too, relies heavily on this bridge. Has that also been playing a major role in, I guess, delays? And also, do we know anything if it's ensnaring anything in terms of traffic at the port? Sorry.
Well, I think what the port did was Jim Newsom, the CEO, decided they would change the gate times for the trucks. Mm-hmm. And we had this problem a couple years back when the Don Holt was having issues.
Yeah.
So we kind of had some practice for this one. So he's done that. But I think, you know, one of the big concerns for people who travel the Wando and the Don Holt, you know, that's a pathway for the trucks to make it from the Wando terminal on, you know, to the Charleston area and beyond with their goods. So I personally know a lot of people, Gavin, who will not take that bridge because they know, or those bridges because they know there are a lot of trucks. Like, for instance, I drive a little bug. It's not my favorite road if I'm going to pee with a lot of trucks. But, you know, I do take it. But what has happened is they are now being rerouted to I-26, to Highway 17, Johnny Dodds Boulevard, then onto the Ravenel Bridge. So people who are on Highway 17 who are used to just having car traffic now also have the truck traffic. So I think when they decided to make the eastbound lanes two-way and basically said it's also open to the truckers as well, I'm thinking that that's the route they're going to take, but we'll just have to wait and see. They are putting up some signs, some roadway signs, to kind of let you know the times for both of the bridges. So as you're coming to and fro, you can kind of look at the times and say, hey, do I want to take this bridge? Do I want to take that bridge? But, you know, the ramps onto these bridges, especially now that it's two-way going eastbound, or in the eastbound lanes, I should say, it's going two-way. It's going to be a little confusing at first. So I think people really just have to kind of take their time and, you know, just everybody be patient with each other if that's possible.
And I know we're taping right now. It's 9 a.m. on Monday morning. And I was looking at some of the traffic cameras over there, with the Wando River Bridge, with the two-way traffic going. Looks like it's going smooth over the bridge, but of course there's still backups leading up to the bridge itself. So while it's also easing, it's still, you know, there's still that gridlock. And I'm guessing this is just really one of the ways that they're really trying to make it work, because we did see them, DOT crews, paving transition lanes out in front of the bridge last week to make this entire transition work. And we did see the governor, Henry McMaster, did order this decision to reverse the lanes. And then, you know, we heard that SUDOT was already kind of planning for this to happen. So right now, I mean, is it going smoothly, too? I mean, was that a wise call? Are people maybe reacting to this positively?
Well, I think initially, you know, town officials were wondering, that's Mount Pleasant. They were wondering if they were going to have to make this call working with the city of Charleston. Like, is this something we should do? And I think they were kind of relieved that they didn't have to make that decision. It came from the governor. And as soon as he gave that order, it was being implemented right away. So I think people are, they're hoping it's going to make things better. You know, they're a little leery about how it's going to work. And of course, with anything that's new, there are going to be some delays, some things that you don't anticipate. Now, something that Mount Pleasant and the city of Charleston did the day before was that they made the lanes going from the Ravenel to I-26, they made two entrance ramps to actually get onto I-26. So that was a really good idea, because now you have two funnels instead of one to let you onto that interstate, because, again, the Ravenel's been backed up. So, yeah, I think people just want to see how it's going to work. I think today will be the real test. We're going to know after the rush hour commute how things go. And then, you know, I guess the good news is they're saying June 11th is the day that the bridge will reopen. And this is interesting, with temporary repairs. So they're going to repair it temporarily. And then once the traffic goes back over, they say they can continue to do the work. But 3 weeks from today. So we'll see what happens.
And Victoria, you're saying that they were really kind of holding firm to that June 11th reopening date. I know you were at that one press conference last week when some fellow journalists were asking if it could be even sooner. You were wondering if it would actually be the 4 weeks itself, but they're maintaining that it's going to be that June 11th open day is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The first press conference, one of the reporters asked, is there any chance it could open sooner? And everybody kind of laughed and they said, oh, yeah, anything's possible. And then I asked, is it possible it could open later? And then everybody got kind of quiet and said, well, anything's possible. So this last time around, the last question that was asked was, hey, do you still think that June 11th is the date? And they said, absolutely. And I was really surprised that they were so firm about that. But they know what kind of problems this is causing. They've been in the area. I mean, Christie Hall has been in the area. They've been traveling. They know what commuters are dealing with. So, and, you know, the governor has a mandate. He wants this done. So we're just going to cross our fingers and hope it's good to go. But, you know, the bottom line really, Gavin, is I think personally from people I talk to is, you know, it stinks that it shut down. It does. But at the same time, you know, our safety has to come first. And if they think that there is a problem with that bridge, then they need to shut it down for as long as it takes to get it fixed.
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, you know, they were kind of getting a hard time for doing these weekly inspections. But we know how infrastructure works in the state of South Carolina. We know how it works nationwide, is that Our infrastructure spending is tight. They just raised the gas tax for the first time in 30 years last year. And not that this bridge would be directly affected by that, but, you know, we have kind of a tendency of not fixing things until they're broken. We're kind of a reactionary state. Look at the prison riot we saw over in Lee Correctional Institution, where, you know, the locks don't even work on the doors there. So, I mean, this is not an infrastructure issue locally isolated to this bridge. Like I said, I think I saw a number on the Post and Courier. Of the county's 282 bridges in Charleston County, 259 are in good or fair condition, while 46 are found to be poor or structurally obsolete. And that is not just Charleston alone. I mean, we have those issues all over, and we did see that with some of the gas tax money that a lot of those bridges across the state will be fixed. This bridge itself, the Wando River Bridge, is 30 years old but has a life expectancy of 50 years. Now, I did see something in the Post and Courier also that Secretary Hall says it doesn't need a full-scale repair at this time. But that they will be obviously making a more permanent fix once this temporary one is done. But the bridge is interesting. This article from Glenn Smith and Jennifer Barry Halls of the Post and Courier points out that the bridge was designed by a Florida-based firm, Fig Bridge Engineers, which built this huge span, this 7,900-foot span, in the late 80s. And the company stands by this design, though there's been some issues with other similar bridges across the country that they've built. And I know that there was a collapse of a pedestrian bridge in Florida that they also designed. You might remember that it happened recently. But is there any insight? Is anyone talking about this bridge engineering company in terms of, you know, what their response has been, or if they're liable for any of this, since it is still just a 30-year-old bridge with a 50-year expectancy?
I think that question will be addressed next. Of course, as soon as people found out it was the same firm, same company as the one for the Florida pedestrian bridge, everybody went, oh my goodness, you know, everybody got excited and scared. And, you know, really, they're very different bridges. So I think really the focus right now is getting this bridge fixed, and then we'll go back, or I should say they will go back and see what happened and did it have any, you know, are these companies in any way responsible? I don't know. I think that question they're holding off on. They're not talking about it publicly until they get this bridge fixed. But, you know, something I think that caused a lot of confusion and I think got cleared up at this last press conference, the very first press conference, they talked about the weekly inspections after that first cable was found to be damaged. It wasn't snapped by any means. So that is when the weekly inspection started, back in 2016. Then one of the engineers said, oh, and yeah, by the way, we've been doing daily inspections. And nobody really followed up on it. I think we all kind of just sat there like, what? Did he just say what? And so I think that's where all the fear came about. Like, what's been going on? Why has this bridge been being inspected daily? So this last press conference, I said, can you please explain these daily inspections of the bridge? When did they start and why? And they're like, oh, yeah. No, that did not start, they say, until after they found this particular snapped cable. So they weren't doing daily inspections up until that point. They started them afterwards.
So they're doing daily inspections now.
Right. As soon as they found that last Monday, they started the daily inspections. But before, they were doing weekly inspections. Now, do people know about the weekly inspections? Yeah, a lot of local officials say, no, we weren't really in the loop. We didn't know that there could potentially be a problem. But, you know, Gavin, really the bigger picture, the bigger issue is, in this community, like a lot of other communities across South Carolina, we are growing incredibly fast. Anywhere, the numbers fluctuate from 38 to 50 people move to the Lowcountry each and every day. And the roads, the infrastructure, simply hasn't been able to keep up with it. And not only that, where is the room? I asked that question. I said, hey, let's take a look back at the bigger picture. It just takes one accident on one of these bridges, because they are so critical to commuters. It takes one accident to cause the kind of backups, not to the same extent that we saw, but we have some extreme backups. And that'll last a day following an accident. This one's going to be weeks. But what's being done to look at the bigger picture and infrastructure? And they said they're looking for funding. They're looking for money. They talked about the extension of I-526. But really, a lot of folks there think it's not about infrastructure and about building more. There's got to be another way. We need to talk about public transportation. We need to start looking at other solutions because, again, we're growing rapidly. We're running out of space. So how are you going to fix it?
So we still have a lot of questions that need to be answered and a lot of details, especially about how much this bridge is going to cost, the repair cost, who's going to pay for it, as well as some of the details about its repair history. And we know South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen, who has been covering this story from the beginning, will continue to cover it and let us know those details as they come out on South Carolina Public Radio. So thank you very much, Victoria, for joining us again.
You got it. Hey, Gavin, there is one plus to this. Ready? Personally, I feel like I'm always running late, just running late. Now I have to prepare. I have to brace myself. I've been showing up to things at least 10, 15 minutes early.
It's a win. There's some gold. There's a silver lining right there, Victoria.
You got to try to find it, right? You got to look for the good where you can.
Exactly. Thanks, Victoria.
You got it. Good to talk to you.
And just a refresher on state infrastructure funding. Lawmakers last year approved raising the state's 16.75 cent per gallon gas tax by 12 cents over the next 6 years. Now, when fully implemented, SCDOT will have an additional $600 million to work through a backlog of 30 years of infrastructure issues. The agency is focused first on making 100 miles of the state's deadliest roads safer. It will also replace half of the 750 structurally deficient bridges and widen interstates, including Malfunction Junction here in Columbia. It will also devote $300 million to resurfacing thousands of miles of roads. Time to hit the old dusty campaign trail to bring you up to speed on news regarding statewide political campaign activity. Well, the knives are out in the gubernatorial race. Yes, there's been a lot of tough talk already, but with 3 weeks until the June 12th primary, the attack ads are out in full force, at least in the Republican field. Last week, Palmetto PAC, which is supporting Governor Henry McMaster, began airing an effective ad, that's my Uber driver's words, not mine, attacking Catherine Templeton's employment history at three state agencies. The ad repeatedly shows President Donald Trump saying, "You're fired," apprentice style, after a narrator lists Templeton's past positions at DHEC, Department of Revenue, and the Ports Authority. Despite well-sourced articles by the Post and Courier, Templeton refutes the DHEC claim, saying she resigned, something former Governor Nikki Haley also confirms, despite statements from Haley's previous chief of staff, who now works for McMaster. And Templeton said she left Department of Revenue after completing her consulting work. Some stations have ceased airing the ad after Templeton's lawyers sent cease and desist letters. Now, her campaign has also fired back with an ad of its own, discrediting McMaster's ad and calling him desperate. It also has a photo of McMaster surrounded by several advisors, with a narrator saying, quote, "his closest political advisors have been indicted," quote. Now, those advisors that they're referencing no longer work with the McMaster campaign. Other Republicans also launched campaign ads. Lieutenant Governor Kevin Bryant launched two highlighting how he'll fix state roads and also talking about his stance on issues. Upstate businessman John Warren touted his military experience and his entrepreneurial drive. He also launched a radio spot similar to Bryant's, attacking SCDOT bureaucracy and the gas tax. And quickly, Democratic gubernatorial candidates have also taken to the airwaves, according to the Post and Courier, albeit with a softer, more biographical type ad. Columbia Representative James Smith and Florence lawyer Marguerite Willis launched their ads late last week with six-figure media buys in Charleston, Columbia, Greenville, Spartanburg, Myrtle Beach, and Florence. In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And now we have South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney on again. I think we're having a recurring segment here where Russ, we probably need to come up with a name of it, Russ's Questions or something clever. But Russ, you got two that you are trying to stump me with again. Let's hear what they are.
Well, since you struggled so bad time, I figured we would start with an easy one this time.
Jeez Louise.
I don't think you've done it before. So the question is, what is the official South Carolina state stone? A, purple amethyst. B, blue granite. C, mica caskey. D, limestone.
Whew. I've heard of all of those before because I have studied geology very thoroughly.
It is kind of tricky, I must admit that.
No, I mean, I'm a student of geology here. Not a good student of astronomy, but very good student of geology. And I have heard of all of those, like I said. And mica caskey is definitely the clearest answer, the most accurate response. Mica caskey. Is that correct?
Blue granite.
Oh, whoa.
Officially made the state stone by the General Assembly in 1969. Now, it was tricky because purple amethyst is the official state gemstone.
Okay, see, that's where I was going.
But blue granite, which isn't actually blue, is the official stone.
Well, and I think mica casky is actually a sedentary rock, if I'm correct. I need to double check my sources on that, but I think it's a sedentary rock. But and now you have another question,
yeah,
Russ.
Enough of the warm-up. which one of these famous South Carolinians never made a bid for the White House? Which one of these famous South Carolina officials, politicians, office holders never ran for president? A, John Rutledge, the first real governor of South Carolina following the Revolution. B, John C. Calhoun. C, James F. Jimmy Burns. D, Strom Thurmond. E, Ernest Fritz Hollings. Which one of those never launched a formal bid and ran for president of the United States?
Well, I know Strom and Fritz did. Calhoun was, what, the vice president for
that's
Jackson.
Good. That's good.
So I'm going to say Rutledge.
The answer is James F. Jimmy Burns.
Mm.
Hollings made an unsuccessful bid for the Democratic nomination in 1984. Strom Thurmond ran on the Dixiecrat ticket in 1948. As you mentioned, John C. Calhoun ran in 1824, was unsuccessful, but he was elected vice president that year. John Rutledge ran in 1788, defeated by George Washington. However, President Washington did name him as a justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. James F. Jimmy Burns, governor, U.S. Secretary of State, U.S. Supreme Court justice, but never ran for president.
And that's our minute with Russ here. Very insightful. I got two incorrect answers this week.
We'll make them a little easier
maybe,
next time.
Maybe you did better at home while you were listening. But if not, you're there right there with me. Thank you, Russ, for that insight in our history. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and tune in Friday evenings at 7:30 on ETV for This Week in South Carolina. All of that, this podcast and more is available on SCETV's super easy to use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. You can also find us on the NPR One app. Follow us on Instagram at @scledepod, that's at @scledpod, and you can see photos from the studio, our dank memes, photos from around the statehouse, and on assignment. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @scledepod. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scledepod@scetv.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Caitlin Park is our social media consultant. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on May 21st, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. Fraser Crane is Kaiser Sose.